Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution, where it is that time of year, the final episode of the 2024 season, the top, favorite, whatever, albums, spectacular edition. I am your host, Robert, and actually, you know what? Forget music podcasting. Okami 2, motherfuckers! You can't comprehend just how fucking back we are, gamers. And with me, I have...
The Jokers are everywhere. Especially the banana. God bless the banana.
And...
Wow, well, monkey gave it away. Wow, why did it win? Even though it wants to war. I've been hearing that shit on TikTok. All this week. And of course, the reason for people saying, "Oh, should have won, it sold more," all that other bullshit. Like you doing the same shit that most music nerds be pushing about when something. Well, yeah, basically that's like doing.
It's the video game equivalent to Fantano giving My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy a light 6,
and he was proven right about that.
And okay, and I recall they said the Game Awards are like 90% jury, 10% fan vote, right?
Yeah, it is a gigantic pile of who the fuck cares.
It seems like some other award show should do that.
If only they could all.
Yeah, but we look. The important thing here is again, Okami 2. We are back. That one game with the Jokers, still consuming my existence. I've still only won 2 rounds in the fucking however many attempts I made. I'm gonna get more. I gotta figure out how I'm gonna fucking win with the red deck. And, what else? Yeah, as, you probably might be able to tell from the sound of my voice, my cough has still not gone away. Which is gonna make tonight a very interesting night. Also, other important things, we got a new episode of The Amazing Digital Circus, which, featured a great deal of torment to the Purple Rabbit Bastard. Excellent. And we totally didn't skip any annoying social media discourses about the value of life involving a guy named Luigi.
Speak for yourselves.
You know, you tell me I'm not supposed to crack jokes about this, but... Come on, his name is Luigi Mancione, how could I not?
Talk about getting whacked. It's very stupid when it's in the real world.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't even a guy named Big Pussy involved. How am I supposed to take it seriously if Big Pussy isn't involved in the whacking? You gotta meet up at the Bada Bing to get everything all sorted out, you know what I mean?
Bada boom, motherfucker!
Please watch The Sopranos, people. I'm begging you. It is peak television, for real.
Look, I'm going to eventually, okay? I'm just busy with those fucking Joker cards, goddammit. But yeah, this isn't a Okami 2 podcast yet.
Yes.
That might actually be what we do next year. But anyway, yeah, as you can tell, this is the year-end list, where we go through everything that came out. Well, okay, not everything, but all the stuff we got to in 2024. And talk about what we thought were the coolest ones, the best, the brightest, the most interesting. All of that, of course, being measured by the highly scientific metric of, it's our lists, we can do what we want.
Haha.
Yeah. So, I guess before starting on the list proper, do we have any overall sentiments about how the year was feeling as a whole? I mean, aside from how much fun it was to dunk on Drake all year.
Well, aside from that, 2 words. Fuck it.
Tell us how you really feel.
Oh boy, where do I begin? Well, there's the usual fuck it of the world around us, deciding, you know what? We've had it good for far too long. Let's make things even worse for the next couple of years, because it would be really funny for a lot of people. Fucking Christ.
Yeah.
And just speaking personally, having to deal with people on a regular basis in my line of work, a certain place. Ugh. Can you tell I'm just feeling very burned, just in general, by the sound of my voice?
Just a bit.
I have seen the deluge of people just regressing in what we consider a society, not knowing how the fuck to act. And that's just in my line of work. The stories I could tell, but I won't because, well, it would be kind of uncouth of me to talk about industry secrets, but I'll just say, if you're going out to stay at a nice hotel, pick up after yourselves. It's the least you can do. Just pick up after yourself and don't ask for shit every day. Some of us don't like that.
Ugh. Ew.
And to cap off this Sunday of shit, my brain's fucked. My brain is very fucked, and as much as I would love to say I have a proper diagnosis of what's going on in my brain, I don't, because that takes time and money, both of which I do not have to spare. In time, it'll get all sorted out, but I'll just say, seeing videos from the likes of Rob Scallon, John from ARTV, and even Jacksepticeye talking about their recent diagnoses, yeah, I am going down that path, and I can't say anything is confirmed because it's not, but there's a 99.9% chance my brain is filled with several mental ailments that have affected my brain for the last forever. I'll just leave it at that and work on getting myself better in the new year, because that's just what I want to do. I want to try to get better. I've learned that if you say you're going to do things and you fall back on them, that's a pretty shitty feeling to have. So consider this my way of saying in the new year, I am going to try to do some things. That way, if I end up falling short of it, I can say, well, at least I tried. I feel a little bit better about myself.
Yeah. That's kind of how I'm feeling about the year as a whole, and then going into the new year. Though I technically have, a diagnosis from, way back in the day.
Yeah, it turns out trying to get all that done when you're 30, going on 31, is harder than it looks and costs way more money than it should, because society is gatekept by fuckheads at the very top of the mountain who don't care whether or not we live or die. But oh, clutch those pearls if one of them goes down.
Yeah. At least I have good music to make me feel a little bit better about things.
That we do.
Yep.
So, yeah, interesting year for music, even if, admittingly, there was a lot of stuff happening, but obviously there was the one big dominant story, which, I don't know, yeah. We might touch it on it in our own capacities if my anticipations of our collective lists are to be believed. But, yeah, we should probably get things started. So, as always, like with the roundups and such, the first list to go up on the docket will be Mr. Alex.
Okay, and for this go-around, I had decided to do away with arbitrarily ranking everything, because looking at my list of albums, I don't know how to actually rank them in any capacity. So I'm just going to say, fuck it! No numbers! Instead, I'm going to hand these out like an awards show, but not like a bad awards show like the Game Awards or the Crunchyroll Awards, like an actual good awards show that actually means something. Like the Junos. I hear the Junos are important to people, especially up in Canada. So, how this is going to work is I have categories, and I will just list them off without any notes or anything written out, because my life is busy enough as I didn't have time to write out 3,000 words on everything, so if I ramble, too bad. Fuck you. So, at the top of my list, I have here Best and Favorite Pop and Electronic Album. naturally, this goes to Brat by Charlie XCX. It was the one pop album and electronic album I listened to the most over the year, for good reason. It's very good, very catchy, very hooky, very bratty, if I could turn a phrase. Ha ha, I'm funny. That's a... Yeah, it's just the one album I kept going back to. I may come back to it later, you never know. For best maturation of smooth pop sounds, I have here Billie Eilish, Hit Me Hard and Soft. I really liked the album. I thought it was a good step forward from Happier Than Ever. It's a very lush album. Not, I wouldn't say totally mellow, but it's very soothing to the ears. Something you want, something you would be okay putting on in the background while you're having a soak in a hot tub or trying to drift off to sleep while reminiscing about how shit things are when you just need something to lighten your mood when you're trying to go to bed. I was going somewhere with that, but I lost it, so, well, probably not important. For a favorite country album, it was the one country album I listened to throughout the year, Beyonce, Cowboy Carter. Don't fuck it up, Grammys.
Oh, you know they might. Going to.
Yeah, a 27-track country album, a stretch for me, considering my policies, but when an album commands its attention, I have to give it some attention and give it a listen, and I really enjoyed it. Just start to bottom, it's a very fun, wild experiment in style and genre blending, and yeah, can't wait for Act 3. Okay, favorite 2000s era video game style electronic album in 2024. Igloo Ghost, Tidal, Memory Exo, and DDS and Gallon Tipton, You Like Music? I mentioned before that I like certain PS2 games like Kinetica. The music is awesome. I love that kind of electronic techno house music of like 98, 99, 2000, 2001. These albums remind me of those times when I was just playing PS2 games and listening to wild house music. I like that.
You know, since you bring that up, I just real quick, sorry to interrupt it. By HS, do you follow a guy on YouTube named Dedico?
I do not. I follow too many people as it is.
They're a video game DJ that specializes in doing, like, jungle, drum and bass, house DJ mixes of, like, PS1, PS2 game soundtracks. Give it a look. It sounds like it's something you might enjoy.
I will keep that in mind then. Okay, so yeah, very good. This makes me want to play Kinetica again because Kinetica is such a fun game. Okay, favorite surprise metal album. Knocked Loose. You won't go where you're supposed to. I've talked earlier in the year about the importance of the album experience and how certain singles and videos, when disconnected from that album experience, can leave a misleading taste in your mouth. The whole album is a fucking mad trip of pissed off core, and I absolutely adore it. It's so heavy and abrasive and in your face, and that snare ring is just, it just thwaps. It just thwaps. It thwaps and rings in your ears. I like that. Good luck at the Grammys, guys. You're going to need it.
You're here.
Yeah. Also, yes, jaunt, 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 all the jaunts. Okay. Best, I should say favorite post-core queer album, that's how I wrote it on here, See You Space Cowboy, Coup de Grâce.
Ah.
Yeah, like the Knock Loose album, it's just full of heavy, in-your-face, aggressive, pissed-off energy, and I can definitely go with that. It's also queer in so many ways, and I'm also down with that. Don't let anybody tell you how to live your life, especially fuckheads on the internet, people. Also, closing the album out with just a very simple adios. That's good. That's a good epitaph for an album. All right, best and favorite prog metal album, of which there were very few this year. Job for a Cowboy, Moon Healer. Front runner at the very start of the year, it still made its run at the very top by the end of the year. this is what I like in technical music. It's just, it's heavy, it's grooving, it's got wild, chunky riffs, wicked, syncopated bass lines. This is what modern technical death metal / deathcore should be to me. Like, more of this, please. Hopefully this is more than just a one-and-done return. Okay, best and favorite album of wild post-metal noises, Melt Banana 3 Plus 5. I was unfamiliar with these folks before, after listening to the album and just descending into madness, listening to all of it. I still don't know what I listened to, but I like it, so that's a positive. That's a positive in their favor.
One of us.
I should probably go back to the discography. It's one of those things I'm going to try and do next year. But yeah, consider me impressed with what I heard. More so than Fantano, which, what were you expecting, man?
Oh, did he not care for it?
Not as much. Mm. Okay. Best comeback album with a lot of stupid discourse and baggage, Linkin Park From Zero. Yes, I'm one of those guys. The more I listen to it, the more I like it. I can't help it. It's what I like. I don't care if that makes me wrong. I don't care about the baggage. I don't care about all the extra bullshit. Just let me listen to Good Things Gone and just well up from how good it is at the end, okay? I know there are songwriters on there. I know there's a lot of inner workings behind it. I don't care anymore. I'm so done with it. I had to spend 3 months dealing with people just about it back and forth. I'm tired of it. Let me enjoy the music in peace. All right. Favorite fun rap album with a lot of wrestling references to it. West Side Gun, Still Praying.
Oh.
I'm still unfamiliar with the Griselda lore, as one would say, but this album is just fun. It's just a fun wrestling jam rap album with a lot of cool stuff in it. Thumb up for me.
Hmm.
All right. Best and favorite rap album that isn't GNX, Tyler, the Creator, Chromacopia.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He is growing up before our very eyes, and it's wonderful. It's such a wild experience that I had to give a couple more spins back around. We already talked about this a couple months ago. I don't need to go over it again. And for best and favorite rap album, yes, Kendrick Lamar, GNX.
Squabble up.
It's only been out for like a month. I listened to this album like 6 times over already. And that's rare for me. Like, I don't listen to new albums that much anymore because I don't have time for that. Also, I like listening to albums I'm more familiar with. But this album is just bangers. It's an album of bangers. And the more I listen to it, the more I'm convinced that Heart Part 6 might be my favorite Kendrick Lamar track. Like, full stop.
Interesting.
I'm a sucker for SWV, okay? I can't help it. Use your heart and not your eyes. Yeah. All right. And I'm just going to throw this one in here. Favorite overdue vinyl pickup. Dream Theater Metropolis Part 2, Seeds from Memory, from the Volume 1 vinyl box. It took so long for me to get a copy of this album on vinyl because it's been so out of print for so long, but I finally got it. I'm very happy that I did. I'm also happy I got the box set because the bass response on these pressings is, it's boomy. It is very boomy, and I like that. Although I am a little miffed that Rhino announced, hey, we're going to release these on their own in January. Like, cool, I spent $180 on the box set just to get it first. Don't I feel stupid? Can't wait for Volume 2. And although I did say I'm not going to do arbitrary rankings, well, I can change my mind whenever I want to. I have a top 3 list for my favorite albums of the year. In 3-2-1, Knock Loose, You Woke Up Before You're Supposed To, Kendrick Lamar, GNX, and surprise, surprise, Charlie XCX, Brat. It's the albums I listen to the most throughout the year, and Charlie is at the very, very, very top.
Quite a trifecta.
And rightfully so. Yes, 2 albums that surprised me completely, and 1 that blindsided me with just how sudden it came and how good it is. I know this is technically considered, you know, cheap popular picks. I don't care anymore. Let me listen to the stuff I like, and y'all can listen to, I don't know, whatever Pitchfork is shilling any given week, or whatever Rolling Stone says is the top albums of the year, or Taylor Swift, because people just love buying that album 75 times over, don't they?
Your streaming is.
Maybe the audacity of this bitch, I swear. So that's my rather abbreviated list, because bleh. The year's been bleh, I'm done. I'm ready to just say fuck it and move on.
Yeah, I get you. Plus, I got vacation I'm going on, like,
yeah,
over the weekend. Well, okay, starting on the weekend and then through the rest of the... You get what I mean.
Yeah. We're recording this before Christmas, so yeah. We're in the past right now.
Fuck yeah. Now, of course, as always, once that list is done, we move on to the middle. So time for Mark's top list of albums. Shit, I forgot. I read the thing that he posted. I forgot how long the list was. You know what I mean. Mark, save me before I keep talking stupid.
Okay. Everybody knows that I already did a written version, and the cover, or the cover art is basically, well, you know what? If you know, you know. I'm just gonna leave it at that.
What else would it be?
So yeah. And I picked 25 albums this year. Why? Because fuck it. I'm gonna pick what I like, and I'm gonna keep this short. Me to 24. Outside of the whole, you know, beef. It was up and down. I've seen it depressed or sad. Maybe fucked up, I don't know. But on Monday, I was like, well, at least the music keep me all good. So, yeah, usually I'm going to start off with, you know, with number 25. That is Mark Homme, Rich Ass Haitian.
Ah.
Yes. The album from the rapper that said, fuck genius, because he's just such for lyrics for this. Good luck. He posted that shit nowhere. Like he's like, you want this? You gotta listen to this. Like, just full listen to it. Like, give it. Like, basically just say, yeah, you gotta pay attention. He ain't one of the rappers. Like, he's one of the very mysterious rappers, because you know he never you never know what's. What he looks like, because he always got that mask, and yeah. You know his real name. See, I'm keeping this short, like, he goes to hollering, you know, like hollering stuff, where, you know, someone comes from his plight, using French and Creole to get out of his own, you know, identity, though, you know, keeps up a mystery. Like, it's not one I talk about as much, like, it's still able to listen to, but still, like, some songs in there, like stuff like Empty Spaces, Cut the Cold, Say 24, the title track, which, you know, was produced by Kitchenada, which stay tuned. But yeah, Apple's top notch, this one almost that require you to give us full attention. I'll just say that. Number 24, it's to be a shock to some people, Megan Thee Stallion with Megan!
Oh.
And probably Act 2. Because it's my list, because fuck you. Look. We all know about the Kendrick and Drake beat, but let's not forget that the one diss track that started it all, and we haven't heard the Frank. And considering she had a stellar year. She had a pretty good year. Not even a weak ass diss that some other rapper did bothered her. And yeah, she usually does best, like, talk about, you know, hot girl shit, flexing on any type of hating-ass bitch, either male or female, and go to some personal shit, which, okay. And also, I'll get some weep shit, which we all love her for. Because you get the voice out there from Jujutsu Kaisen to do an intro for you. I'm hot and cold on JJK right now, but it's like, it's kind of awesome. It's kind of awesome that happened. And you got more stuff that I kind of like. Like, yeah, I really wish you liking that track she did with Spirit Box, which, okay, it's alright. Kind of high.
Excellent.
Yeah. Number 23, I might keep this short. Billie Eilish, hit me hard and soft. Something he tells somebody to do that, then yeah, they're looking strange at you for a reason. Yeah, like, okay, yeah, really, like, album, like, of course, dudes, like, other people, like, you know, kind of, you know, basically, like, the ways of love, kind of people, like, kind of, you know, what you're going through, some other type of shit, which, well, I say, I like this more than her second album, which is still good, I just like this one more. It's like, okay, she's doing some shit that I mean, that kind of like. Also like the song Tachiro, because it's very good. So, yeah. Number 22. Bruiser Wolf, My Stories Got Stories.
Two bad bitches on my dick at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I want to suck with this guy. We got some good storytelling rap, and you got an album called My Stories Got Stories, that, yeah, you're all good. Like, I was fucking heavy, like, from the last album, and wow. I like that one. Well, this one, like, I like the other one more, but this one is still good. Like, maybe I got someone's personality and charm, and you know, he's doing stuff right now. So yeah, I'm good with that. Number 21, and yeah, it's Brad, but every damn thing with Brad. Yes, yes, the original Brad, the Brad Deluxe Edition, at the Brad Remix album. Yes, everything Brad, because fuck it, why not?
The Brat Triforce. Yeah. The Father, the yes. Son, and the Holy Brat.
You can tell that I like the Brat Spirits a lot, like, whether it be the original and the remix, can you give it me? I don't like most remix albums, and this was pretty good, too. Like, all I can do is, like, his mix of hyper-pop and rave music. And to be fair, like, here's the thing. Like, at first, I was going to be like, man, I don't know about this. I'm just like, oh, this is actually pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. I should be quick to judge. This is all good. And again, if I have like the music before, I'm just glad this year, well, you know, she got some big success than previous years, which, all right, I'm all good for. And it got some like So I, which is pretty good. Guest, of course, basically the summer white girl anthem of the year, kind of. Yeah, Apple, everything was pretty good. Yeah, you know, even a breast summer, even though we had breast summer, and it worked. It worked throughout the year, kind of. But yeah, it is also some good shit. Also, don't spend any more pop girlies on this list. The added Billy, added Charlie. There you go. Right, number 20, Schoolboy Q, Blue Lips.
Wow.
Yeah, like, okay, like, after Crash Talk was kind of, well, crashed, I was hoping something different than Schoolboy Q, and, like, you know, it grew on me. Like, he always, like, again, we got the gangster rap that has, you know, talks about Elias, that goes well, explore the mental health state about that shit. Like, everything must be, like, from the Dungeons interesting. Like, you got checks like Ohio and Foe, which I just love that track with him and Absol in it, which is pretty good. Also, watch the video for Lost Times. See, in case you missed it, he did a video for Lost Times, the one that's produced by the Alchemist, where he got like, all these old cartoons, Looney Tunes, Disney, but everybody's black. It's like you see Black Elmer Fudd, Black Bugs Bunny, Black Little Mermaid. I remember this one comment on there that like the school is I want to say what it is, but I know something like are you willing to handle all these copyright claims or not or say or something like that? He said I can't remember, but it's like that. But yeah, anyway, this album is pretty solid. It's pretty solid, like. I guess School with Cute doing School 2, and that is a good album. I was worried about a bit, but yeah, it's all good. Number 19, Freddie Gibbs, You Only Die Once. And if one said the name, I could say once, because it's actually how spelled. Just like twice, like two twice. And maybe the Freddy Gibbs album that most of you expected. Like, again, if you're supposed to know the Alfredo or Bandana, then you better keep moving. just saying, like, does have this concept of, you know, basically, you know, the him maturing as a person while trying to make control of, his vices, question the fucked up shit he says, focus on stuff like acting, because he's trying to be an actor, which he should, because he'd be funny as shit, and trying to think that a downfall like most rappers are going through right now. Also, in the album, like, this kid where he has Slink Johnson playing the devil saying, oh, yo, do this shit, man. Like, basically, Slink Johnson playing the devil, who's known for being Black Jesus.
Man, now again, I want to rewatch Black Jesus.
Yeah. Although, all I think about might be kind of sad, considering two of, well, you get it.
Yeah.
Number 18, Bodhi James and Harry Fraud, the Britchenary. Something that appeared in November. Like, this appeared on the day when that other album was released. Good thing Elizabeth's first, because I'm like, okay, like, yeah, let's get another time to see Bodhi James. He's the project this year, and he got a few records out. I'll get them one later. He got one with, you know, with Harry Fraud, and yeah, this is way dope. Don't for production with Bodhi Street Light Bars and his production. And yeah, and he gets all that Bodhi, the Bodhi keeps on releasing shit, and like, what, well, like, he these albums is not a problem, because like, he ain't flooding the market. It's like, here's one over here, 4 months later, he's over here, 4 months later, over there. Like that. Like they can do that, or not. It's not like, you know, King Gizzard the Lizard Wizard type of album. But yeah, I thought of it.
Oh yeah, that reminds me, you have like, what, 2 more weeks left in the year? Come on, you guys gotta get out another album, people!
Okay. Number 17, Igloo Ghost, titled Memory Exo. Again, this album just reminds me, well, even though Alex said this reminds a lot of PS2 games, or am I reading that right?
Yep, he did in fact say PS2 games.
Yeah, for me, this reminds me of, well, basically a thing that I kind of missed the most, that being the Adult Swim Singles Program. I know. And yeah, this is what I listened to all of the year, which, again, a song that I keep playing is a Nematode, because it's not playing a song, if I hear that song, I'm just picturing you're in a rave, everybody's hot, sweaty, dancing, just basically moving and being hot, funky, and sweaty, basically that shit. Yeah, it's not very excellent. Number 16, speaking of quality bangers, Denzel Curry, King of the Mischievous Self, Volume 2. Once again, we get some bangers, some good-ass fucking bangers. A single to mixtape that carries all the vibes of summer hip-hop and modern hardcore that got the T6 Mafia essence to it. Yeah, short and sweet, and I know there's a deluxe edition out right now, which I ain't into yet, but I probably should. But you know, you don't do this at this point. Like, you know, last time we brought some serious shit, but we'll see the future, and you know, back to banger territory. Maybe the next album might go some serious shit, which okay, I'm good for that. Also, Ultra Shit, pretty good, pretty good banger, and actually how you start the thing. But yeah, damn good mixtape. Number 15. I know how y'all look at me when I say this name. But I do feel like I like this project overall, so I'm just gonna say it. JPEG Mafia, I Lay My Life Down For You.
Huh.
Now, while not being better than LP and Scaring the Holes, and while this year, you get the whole year, it's like, yeah, like, it's still a solid project with him, but it's like, you know, you can do some, you know, wild scramble shit, where pieces like you having, like, they have Brazilian funk on, like, some funk on Private School Rapper, and then it got Flume to help him with Vince Staples on a track, which reminds me why I love Vince Staples for that. And then we go to Dark, and then later on we go to Dante Toy, where it's like, he suddenly is going to some shit, which, okay, like, again, even though this year got me questioning, like, why the, Like, again, with Chris, I'm like, no, the obvious of, why the fuck you vote for that man? I mean, I know why. I mean, I know why, but still. I know why, but still. But, yeah, considering that, well, okay, considering that, like, still putting out some good shit, and I'm hoping, and look, a new hope that he does do Scaring the Host Inviting 2, hopefully, because, like, because streets need that shit.
We need those two rapping over a Knocked Loose sample. Come on, Danny, I know you can convince Peggy to do it.
Yeah, it's a good album, Jimmy Mafia. You did good, I'm not mad at you. I mean, I'm disappointed in one aspect of you, but you still did good on this album. I said go to your room, but he's gonna say fuck you, whatever. Go to your room, fuck you. Damn. Okay, number 14. Five Tools to Breeze. And, that's what expected. Considering my favorite songs list is like a fucking paragraph. Because one of the songs is your fucking sentences.
Mom Spaghetti.
Yeah. At this point, I can describe how music appeals to me. Like, you hear the glisten of your sound, the hardcore, aggressive, screamo, metal elements. You have a bit of jazz, art rock, and the sound that I've known for all these years. And once again, the long ass song titles, like the every screw who has been hit by a car, I'm sorry and I love you. Or, let's see, a considerable amount of piety, invasive speeches of spiritual anguish, some kind of not the tie, sitting tight, clear team clanks, bounce of sweaty mom spaghetti. it's the good old Five Tools music that all of us knows that. Once we see it, once we care about it, it's like you want it. Number 13, and this is gonna be tricky. West Side Gun, Conway the Machine, and the Alchemist, Hall and Nash 2, original version. AKA the album that dropped in December of last year, that was shelved in 2016. Yes, my favorite West Side Gun album project, Griselda Project, is an album that was released last year, December, but was shelved in 2016. It's basically unreleased stuff. It's the welcome sort of thing on my list that's, you know, on this list. But this one just, maybe because the reason I like this one, because it reminds me that I got into them in 2016. It's a ton of those ones to hear. Like, even though my favorite song is basically an eight-year-old song with Fork in the Pot with Schoolboy Q, which is a little bit. That video was weird as fuck. Like, it's very neat. You can tell that's right, like 2016. But yeah, even though later on, like, going back to this project, it's like, man, I was like, man, this time to be alive with this shit, but yeah. Number 12. Now, like I said, the only two pop girlies on this list were Charlie and Billy, because, let's be honest, I don't care a lot about most pop albums this year. Like, I know some people like that's a Sabrina Carpenter, I don't care. Or that's wrong, I really don't care. Or they said, I really, really don't care, but it's just that, I'm talking to a 34-year-old black man who knows what he likes, but when it comes to pop albums, I'm kind of picky. Like, some of the pop players just don't do much for me. I will say a pop trans man does it for me. And yes, you know that one pop trans man. Rodham Red Car, formerly known as Christina Queens, Hopecore. Yeah, I mean, you see more of why Mark likes Riding Red Car, because You basically make it, because we make pumpkins that's more dynamic, that's more, you know what I mean, the more sensual, more sexual goals, deep thing. That's what, basically shit, basically to say, basically shit that makes you want to fuck. Sort of, yeah. Then that dance art pop that's very sensual, very sexual, goes deep into one of your carnal pleasure, which this kind of music I kind of like. Maybe because it actually has a good, not only good beat to it, but I can definitely bump my head to it a lot of times. And yet, checks like deep holes inside of me. Damn. Okay, and also Elevate. I like to check a lot. It's only 8 tracks, but you got the one track that's like 20 minutes long. But still, this shit really got me going. I still love this project being this day. After I did my list, it still goes hard. Number 11, Vince Staples, Dark Times. I said it before and I'll say it again. It's his best project since Big Fish. And at this point, it's something that I probably said already about his albums. But he talks a lot of heavy shit. But not everything's a downer. Like, let's do a two feet. I'm saying it wrong. A two feet. It's a banger. All right. Maturity and Vince, even though dealing with their life and was their approach, which see what I like about Vince Staples. But yeah, all good. And now to the top 10. Woo. Oh boy. Number 10. Timeless by Kei Chonada. Look, I know I'm looking at another 9% with this album, and I'm fine with that, because I need to realize Timeless is going to sound like the first one you love. But yes, this album still has the best display of his music being funky, vibe heavy, energetic, groovy, sensual, hitting the beat so right. Also, does some of the songs sound too familiar sometimes? Yeah, but still a good time. And also, I still laugh at this waste of words. And also, dances that make you want to dance. And also, Drip Sweat should have been bigger than this year. Like, that should make you want, you're dancing in a very sweaty, hot, heavy club. Even the video shows that. Number 9. Bodie James and Nicholas Craven. Or should I say Nicholas No Snapple Stitching Craven. Penalty of Leadership. The first album I checked out was from Bodie from January. And this was bringing, like, I bumped the track Jack Frost almost every other few weeks or so because I still love how it sounds. Like, if I had the best project of his released all year young, knowing Bodie, I know he's bound to do more in 2015, because he always does. Let's hope he does not a part of The Alchemist, because it's been long since the last project with him. So, hey, my fingers crossed. Number 8. Tyler Creator, Chromacopia. Now as you can see, Tyler still, confused the devil with mostly psyche and development and growth. And, he's growing up. As everybody said, his paranoia, more of his romantic side is showing in, would be either wholesome or fucking sad. Would you hear? As you get hints of Tyler, without the problematic elements. We also get production that's, smooth, fear though, just some fucking bangers. I think it's like Father Was Dead, of course, banger. Take Your Mask Off. And does Judy very good. Darling, my favorite project, my favorite song in the project. He's still putting out some good shit. Number 7. Q Robert at 1, has been hotel cosplay.
Ah, yes. Dick Master.
Yes, no worries, but while old.
Bitch.
So, if Yes Lord was showing no pack with smooth paper finale in all R&B, then while old shows like the consequence of that shit, basically, even though it affects his real life, which, you know, got him sounding bitter and stuff, whereas like him, like, even though, you know, he sounds a bit like, there's still that stuff where there's a trauma bond that even though he has like an ass, he still got another medicine performance of just being so brilliant and around that the man's got piping bars. And of course, I'm going to acknowledge who got this very, got this disgusting potential from the dusty 70s R&B sounds. Like, of course, I mean, of course, highlights being, you know, Daydreaming, which of course, a guitar still kills from here, which is that classic soul sounding shit, you know, Keeper, which of course, they still got us in some shit like what you said.
Bitch.
Yeah, but this is the downtrodden. This is the downtrodden soul of R&B the streets needed. Number 6, all I want is the Grand Band National. Fuck being rational. Give what they ask for. Kendrick Lamar, GNX. So give us been a month since it came out. Like, I definitely had. When I first heard about this news, here's the thing. Like, as soon as this new drop, like, I was on my way to get a haircut. And then when I see it, I was like, oh shit, I gotta tell this. They're like, yeah, I gotta do this. But here's the thing, I'm kind of glad he dropped that album out this year because I know I couldn't cheat and put all those disses in an EP, just call it a Fuck Drake EP, but fuck it, like, look it, but. Again, this is a very important year for hip hop, especially because of the Kendrick Lamar and Drake beef. And yeah, him and Zion close to the end of the year blew me off a bit. But it's West Coast, but it's very unapologetic West Coast from the sounds, the features, the balance, the heavy piece of lyrics. It's having fun, a good perspective, but I think it's going through. We may have Brad Summer, but we had a GNX year or the year of the K Dot, or I don't know, something like that.
Year of the K Dot, year of the, you know, I think Spectrum Pulse said it best. West Coast hip hop has been having a really good fucking year in general.
Since I mentioned, you know, Schoolboy and Vince, like, Kendrick's up there too. Well, he's been up there, but this is an excellent album. Like, number 5, and I'm gonna be simple for a moment, because you know what I'm gonna talk about. So, I'm not gonna mention a name, but I was gonna say this. This guy's been on my list many times. This guy had a pen game that is highly skilled. Someone who can write about the perils of his own life, where he went through a lot of things like chess, mythology, school studies, and even things like Christianity or Japanese and Greek mythology. And how most people depend on it. Also, there's a lot of weird samples, a lot of interesting samples to it, and have this very haunting, dotted sound. He makes this excellent music. Like, he's been, like, again, like I said, he's been on my list ever since I started doing this shit. He's been in there almost every year. Well, every year he uses the project. And yeah, it makes me sad he's no longer with us. And yes, it is Car, the Thief Next to Jesus. Yeah, Car's passing is very devastating to hip hop, those dedicated art and crap a bit. Again, like, when we first started doing this shit, I put Art and Kill the Samurai in there, like, on my first list doing this. Like, I was new to him, and new to doing this list, or new to doing this album list overall, but somehow just spoke to me, just somehow just said to me. And then, a couple years later, I put Orpheus vs. Cyrus, that's my number one album from him in 2018. And yeah, most of the stuff, it was on my list, maybe high, maybe in the 20s or teens, but still, like, I'm gonna be able to show some love, or give his flowers while, at least when he was still there. Like, it's just a shame that the man passed away at 52. At that, that's still too young too young age to die. But yeah, man. Kyle was a fucking talent. We truly lost somebody who really was skilled in his own way. And I want to add two more things to that. If you're gonna try to buy, like, if you want to get this music, then do so. Just don't try and buy some shit for $1,000 from fucking leeches.
Oh, fuckheads are doing that.
Yep.
Ugh.
And also to add one more thing, fuck the New York Post. You know.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. Once again, Carl, if you're up, Carl, just know that you're awesome. You are amazing. And brother, may you rest in power and peace. Okay, number four. So, last year I said Boy was on my list. Here's another rapper that's not gonna be on my list at all, and that's Being the Butcher. Like, most of his records this year probably had called to be like his Death and Debut was kind of meh. I mean, I have a couple tracks of it, but it didn't hit at all. And that the fact that the album was produced by both Pac was a hit boy, and I figured I would have liked that, but it didn't hit. Having one album that was produced by both of them did hit in a place that I would like. And that be Big Hit Boy and the Alchemist, Black and White. This was a big surprise to me because, like, okay, I don't get to lie, I ain't heard much about Big Hit. I know he's the father of a producer, Hit Boy. And he father son produced the album, which okay, I'm not good with, like, you got father and son, and Alchemist, so it's a little bit like, well, this is something that I kind of wanted this year. I wanted that hard, grimy hip hop, and he delivers. You check Drugs Are, I'm a song fan album because I watched the video, which he goes hard on that album. He goes hard on that track, and because he got tracks like A Godfather Part 2, Heartless, the Black and White should both hit boy and Alchemist rapping. Hip hop has been when it's trying to be down, dirty, and grimy and volatile. And I just love in case you didn't notice me for all these years, like, yeah, I like hip hop when it's like that. And you like that, but this one big surprise me this year because this was something I checked out very late into when I was doing that roundup for, I want to say May or June. I think it was, May. It was May. It came out after I left this out. And I ended up loving it more than when I first heard it. But yeah, it's definitely a favorite track for the album of mine. And now, I need something lighter. Let's see. Oh, number three. The Alchemist, the genuine articulate. Yes, Alchemist again. I know. I mean, I know. And I will always give Alchemist my flowers because at the time of a car, I'm always going to give my flowers for this one. And he's still, and with this short project, I think he has one of the best beats in here, the best production here all year long. Like, a lot of the track on the album. And yeah, it's a total song, but he made the best beats of dudes all year. Like, this is my favorite project of his all year. I might have missed much, but I'm pretty sure during the report, and hold up. Rob, what you sent me? What's this? Alchemist and Rock Monster. Hold up. They have another album.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah, I saw that and I'm like, oh.
A couple of days ago.
Oh boy, Mark's going to have a whole other wrinkle to his list.
Oh. You just have to release a project. You know, Alchemist, again? Again? This is the second time you did this shit.
You know, it occurs to me with Mark, like with Rock Marciano with the alchemist type stuff is like me with King Gizzard. Oh god, could you imagine the alchemist and King Gizzard getting in the studio together?
That'd be interesting.
I mean, why not? If Kenny Beats can work with idols.
But yeah, still, I gotta cap the ship for next year. Damn it. Okay. Number two. And well, you know, you don't put your stake this. Number three was the, well, like the next two. Well, the next two entries are, well, non-hip-hop. Yeah, Clubby Shocked. Yeah, Clubby Shocked. The next albums are going to be non-hip-hop because these are albums that I listen that I keep going back to all year long. One of them is Justice for Hyperdrama. Yeah, you remember this album? I'm on this album, front to back all year long. Like, this is one of Justice's best albums I heard since Cross. Like, it's everything I want to have on an album. It has the energy, has the groove, has the rush, the mood that I didn't get from the last two previous albums. But it was a good experience. Like here's just like a Never Ender, okay, one like Dear Alan, even stuff like Mannequin Love, which it didn't hit a lot. This Muscle Memory, Saturday, One Night, All Night, The End with Undercat, like, After Image, Muscle Memory, like, there are some, like, going back to this album, like, going back to Very Wild, like, this is music that I just fucking love, like, the hell that the YouTube Music Rewind thing, it said my top artist was Justice, and said about all of May was Saturine, and yeah, I mean, they're not wrong. Then again, there's also the fact that, Ella said my music mood was 25% sad. Which is kind of how I describe my year overall, but yeah. Yeah, it's the one, I mean, if you want a French Citron duo that you need world since that punk retired, and well, after that whole, never mind. But yeah, we just did it, like, yeah, like, I fucking love this album. And before I get to number one, you forgot about those honorable mentions, didn't you? Like, yeah, I got a few honorable mentions. I'll be quick. They are Action Bronson, Johann Sebastian Bach about the Doctor, Channel Trey's Head Rush, Morty James and Conductor Williams Across the Tracks, Your Old Droog Movie, Logic, Ultra 85, Gangrene, Heads I Win, Tails You Lose, Colin Stinson, The Uzumaki Soundtrack, I mean, why not, Don Richard and Spencer Zahn, Quiet in a World Full of Noise, Flying Alone and Spirit Box, West Side Gun, Still Praying, Rob Marciano, Marciology, didn't even mention it, Absol Soul Burger, yeah. And last but not least, The God Fahey and Nicholas Craven, The Myth Who Couldn't Quit 2 and 3. Yeah, both of these, yeah, both of them projects. And now, my number one album of the year, the one that I keep going back to, the one I held as my favorite album of the year. The one that I keep saying that is fucking good. The one that I keep going over. The one. Get out with it! Okay, sorry. Okay. Now, please tell me when I say your name. Ludovici Cole S. Fergus. That's right. Lewis Cole with the Multiple Orchestra and Jules Buckley. Not fake. Yes. This is the album that I went back a lot. This is the album that when I first glanced at a couple of singles, I was interested in learning more about this album and more to it. I just fucking loved it. Like, it got everything it had everything that I felt on the track. You got the basic energy of Things Fall Apart, the big swing energy of Cruise for P, Appealing to Sea as a whole is still one of my favorite tracks. I still play that to this day. Who cares for one and two? The still believers under the of having both common lighthearted music, lighthearted music to that to on Who Cares Two again? The impending Doom Boss music, which kind of describes that describes last month. And okay, and of course you get also version of a song called Bitches.
Yes. Bitches.
Like, again, this album represents 2024 for me as a whole in a nutshell. A year that, again, has some highlights, lowlights, and contemplative thoughts. Doesn't matter, represents that. It's definitely from the heart of strings to the built-up that nearly has you having sort of a crisis. Also, that makes sure the music for a movie, like, it's also music that you would have on movie or video game, like, again, again, I go to Who Cares 1 and 2, where you're thinking, calm like fluttering scene, where main character and his friends just relaxing, and of course, second one, impending Doom music, when it sounds like something would be like a Doom reveal, or, like, for example, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, where they reveal who's behind the green saber that murdered murdered CJ's mom. Like, think about that scene while playing that song.
Man, I haven't thought about that in years.
Big Smoke, you killed Big Smoke! And also Ryder, you don't need to mention him. Anyway, this album is a fucking work of art. Like, it's really the way how it's composed, how it's conducted, how the performance of the A1 Orchestra does, from the instrumentation to the vocal work to how they get their own highlights, because there's a lot of motherfuckers that got their own highlights. Like, this, I don't know if this album the moment was released. It's fantastic, significant, and powerful. More importantly, it's my favorite album of 2024. Yeah. Lewis Cole. Nothing. Brain Feeder. I'm just reading the shit that's on my written thing, but yeah.
And scene.
Yeah.
All right. That was a lot of really interesting stuff. And now it is time for me to try and do this as best I can. Oh, Lord. I got my hulls with me. Got some water on hand. So now I got to figure out how to get through this gauntlet. Because my list this year, it's... I should have double-checked how long my list was last year. I forget if it was 20 or 25, but I do know this year it is, in fact, okay, it's 25 entries, but it's 26 albums. You probably already figure which one I'm doubling up on, but we'll get to that when we get to that. But let's start at the list proper. So, number 25, it's kind of a late addition. I listened to it kind of late in the year, as in literally at the beginning of December, and it came out in October, but it impressed me enough that I kind of threw it on the list anyways. Glorilla with Glorious.
Oh!
Yeah, her full-length debut. I remember when Todd in the Shadows talked up FNF as one of his favorite hit songs of the year. I heard, I'm like, okay, yeah, this kind of goes hard. And, you know, now we have her debut full-length record, and it's pretty fucking legit. She is a really, like, versatile rap talent. We get a lot of stuff on this album. Like, of course, you get a lot of banger rap beats and hard as fuck flows, but you also get a great mix of like a lot of kind of, you know, R&B production as well. You know, her rapping is really tight. It can also be pretty loose and fun, and it even kind of has quite a lot of lyrical nuance. Of course, there's a lot of braggadocio talking up how she's such hot shit, but you even got a lot more like melancholic kind of downbeat songs about like how she has to be on her guard because, you know, in the rap industry, there's a lot of predatory creeps trying to take advantage of you and shit like that.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to have to go back and fill in my knowledge, like, with her mixtapes and stuff. But, yeah, count me on board to see more of what she does in the future. Number 24. Alceste, Les Chants de l'Aurore. So, France and metal has had a pretty interesting 2024, mainly because of the Gojira Olympics performance, which, by the way, thank God that it's finally properly available online, both in streaming format and music, and as an actual video, without fucking commentary and crap. But, of course, the French metal scene has also had quite a bit more going on, perhaps the most notable to me being this new Alcest record, a band which is way better at the whole black metal shoegaze thing than, you know, bands like fucking Death Heaven ever were. This particular one, the record leans a bit more kind of on the shoegaze melodic side of things, crafting a lot of these just really gorgeous soundscapes through the really great meticulous guitar work and the, you know, additional synth textures that really sell the mix of, like, you know, great beauty, but also, like, deep sadness and somberness. Like, I haven't looked at what the lyrics translate to. I don't really speak a lot of French, but pretty much everyone I've seen who talks about the record can assure that it is a pretty, like, emotionally devastating record lyrically, and I'll take their word for it. But even with that, there's still definitely a lot of metal intensity to back things up here and really, you know, round out the package as a whole. Especially on my favorite track on the record, Amethyst, which is the longest song on the record, and is just very immaculate in terms of how it balances out its melodic tendencies with its heavier side. Wee wee, or something. I wish I spoke French. Number 23. Someone get a mop, it's getting sticky in this bitch. Tyler, the Creator with Chromacopia. Tyler at it again with another record that once again sees him embodying some high-concept, multi-layered character-type thing, filtering his struggles with things like romantic connections, fame, and other kind of heavy life topics through layers of identity masking, feeling like he has to go through such lengths to even have a chance at speaking honestly on things of that nature. But of course, the production here is what really sells it for me personally. Remember, I am a sucker for anything that's very percussively driven, and there's a lot of that on this record, from like all the Pharrell influences, stuff like the marching band horns and the drums and all. It all just comes together into one of his most consistent records to date, and yeah, there really are some legit bangers on here too. Number 22, Melt Banana 3+5, which, if you know how to do math, that adds up to 69. How the fuck did I get a bachelor's in stats? Anyway, some might think it's weird for a band to disappear from recording studio stuff for like a decade and then only come back with 24 minutes worth of material on 9 songs. But you know what? Melt Banana's music is always a fun trip no matter what, so this comeback felt solidly worth it. They still haven't skipped a beat, offering a lot of very grinding programmed drum beats, rapid-fire walls of guitar-saturated noise, those blaring computerized effects, and of course, frontwoman Yasuko Onuki's very distinctive high-pitched yelps all swirling together into this just chaotic, noisy package of a record. Hopefully it won't take a decade for the next one. Number 21, Jaylin, Acoma. So following up her pretty good 2023 EP Perspective, she's back with a more proper full-length record that sees her expanding her production chops and musical ideas quite a bit further than even from there. From songs like Summon that have those really unnerving, like, slasher movie string stabs, to the eclectic bleeps and blips of Osset, the stuttering, echoing sense of Iris, and even the beautiful orchestral piano runs on the Philip Glass featuring song The Precision of Infinity. But of course, with this being a footwork record, the drum machines and programming are what ultimately take center stage. And as always, Jaylin throws out tons of fantastic beats that capture the kind of energetic, intricate, and frenetic nature that's made her work so damn compelling from record to record. Especially with the marching band backing on Challenge to Be Continued 2. Number 20. Pissed Jeans, Half Divorced. So there's been a pretty solid amount of pretty good punk and hardcore records out this year, especially from bands like The Chisel, but I think this new Pissed Jeans record stuck with me more than others. Not just the great energy and performances in the music, but because it has this very bitter, sardonic sense of humor. I believe I compared it in the roundup when we talked about it in March to something like Henry Rollins and like his solo career and his tenure with Black Flag. I think that's sort of like sarcasm. With songs like $62,000 in Debt, about trying to climb out of a hole of financial burdens, or Seatbelt Alarm Silencer, which is a middle finger to the bullshit of consumer culture in a way that I'm pretty sure the late George Carlin would be proud of. And of course, the song Everywhere is Bad, which reminds me that one day my hometown of Miami is probably going to be underwater. I hate it here. Please get me out. Number 19. Thou. Umbilical. So the Louisiana sludge metal act Thou has been pretty much in collaborative mode for like the last 5 or 6 years, working with the likes of Regana, Mizemore, and even Emma Ruth Rundle. But this represents their first proper solo record since the 2018, well, their three EPs in 2018 and their full-length Magus from that year. And compared to some of the output they've been doing collaboratively, which leaned quite a bit more into their melodic nuances in addition to their sludge roots, this record is just pure filth and sludge all the way through. You get tons of just buzzy, bassy low end coming from the guitars and the drums in the mix. The song go back and forth between like being those pummeling slow tempo jams and these more energetic like mid-tempo rhythms. Of course, the excellent like shrieking bellows of vocalist Brian Funk. It all swirls together into just this utterly suffocating, vile work of metal brilliance. One that really hammers home the sinister aggression of everything nonstop for 50 minutes. Especially with great tracks like House of Ideas and Emotional Terrorist. Seriously, these guys still fucking rule. They are absolutely one of the best metal bands still doing it today. Number 18. I dedicate this entry to two different groups of people. The G's and the Hustlers. Bruiser Wolf, My Story Got Stories. I don't know if you guys know this, but I have a very dumb sense of humor. As evidenced by the fact that I've been laughing pretty consistently with this record in my rotation on and off throughout the year. Mainly because of Bruiser Wolf's very distinct flow and delivery. That's very much like, if they were still going through with the Boondocks revival, Bruiser Wolf would be an amazing guest character. Just saying. Fuck, half these songs almost sound like they could be about Boondocks characters. When he's, you know, writing songs talking about making fettuccine with fentanyl. The importance of not thinking with your dick and having sex with, you know, the hot church girls. And of course, doing it for Dilla. The beats on here are of course really nice, taking lots of classic soul and R&B samples that are very lush and nice, but also do well to add like a hilarious contrast, because on the one hand, these beats are very suave and sophisticated, and then you hear him rapping about a girl swallowing for the protein.
Ooh.
Again, my sense of humor is very, very dumb, so you cannot be surprised this is on the list. Number 17, Kendrick Lamar, GNX. The victory lap capstone to the wildest music story of 2024. The first proper debut release of the whole PG Lang imprint. Yeah, this is a... Man, that whole thing was just fucking wild. Like, the material here does reflect on his current place in the rap world in various respects, with songs like Hard Part 6 and Reincarnated being some of the more intricate and introspective songs on here. The tone of this record overall is definitely more like ego-fueled collections of brags and boasts, you know, talking up how he's definitely hot shit, backed by a collection of really interesting cameos by various up-and-coming West Coast rap features, and some pretty legit bangers in the, you know, production, as well as the lush R&B vibes. Now, admittingly, I could have maybe done with a bit less Jack Antonoff. Not that he's necessarily bad, it's just, I think he does way too much. Like, we probably could have had, like, a couple other producers have some room to come in and breathe for a bit more variety, but overall, this is the cherry on the cake. It's almost kind of like the most diabolical middle finger of all, that a lot of this almost leans towards more like mainstream, catchy pop rap type of stuff. Because this record is basically Kendrick looking at Drake going, I can do what you do better than you ever could.
Yeah. I know you can do what I do. Oh, and I want to add this. If you want to fuck motherfuckers up, that's shit like, oh, this is slave music. Yeah, Yeah, I can tell you're not like us.
They not like us. They not
Oh, and also, fuck that one guy that said, oh, get that, oh, wait, the one guy about soul samples, get the fuck out of here with that bullshit, with the whole, tell me, get the unch out of here, get your white ass out of here, Trevor. That's your name. I don't know, okay, it's not his name, but, yeah, you get what I mean. It was, yeah.
Whole lot of people showing their ass with this record, and,
Yeah.
You know, Drake, you probably could have just gone into witness protection instead of filing two lawsuits. Just saying. Number 16. And here's the twofer. Surprise, surprise. It's Charlie XCX with Brat. And Brat, and it's completely different, but still Brat. So, yeah. I kind of on and off about trying to follow in tune with, like, the pop landscape. Just because I never know what the good stuff is even supposed to be. Though, in cases like this, I do tend to take Alex's recommendations a bit seriously in this regard, and, well, Brat Summer was definitely all the hype. And plus, you know, it's thankfully in overtime with the remix record to play. It's already one thing to get one record that's a mix of, like, these very emotionally nuanced explorations of her interpersonal relationships, you know, in life, whether it be, like, the romantic kinds or, like, her professional fame, you know, relationships, whether to herself or possible beasts with other pop artists. Mixing that with, you know, really trashy, but, like, fun trashy, like, hyper-pop club bangers. But to then go and make an entire second original project that adds in tons of new angles and ideas than what, like, the original possessed, to the point where it might as well have been just, like, double album at the start, but, like, you know, and I'm not one to complain about release strategy. Like, pretty much everything about this works. It's almost kind of, it's kind of like when they release two Pokemon games, and it's like, you know, you're gonna buy both. I know who I am as a person.
Pokemon Brad.
Yeah, Pokemon. I gotta think of a better joke for that. But the point is, Charlie XCX really went as all out, full on maximalist as you could get in the pop space, and it paid off pretty well. Number 15, Megan Thee Stallion, Megan.
Ooh.
God damn, I love a bad bitch. After all the bullshit she's been going through with mainly being the target of ridicule from, you know, the fucking celebrity gossip space after all the fucking Tory Lanez bullshit. By the way, fuck you, Los Pollos TV. And, you know, the way hip-hop culture as a whole has been treating her personal tragedy as a freak show worthy of clicks, it's fitting that this record literally kicks things off by saying, fuck all y'all. And then just, like, flying off into this entire collection of real fire-ass rap bangers that showcase why she's one of the hottest in the game right now. Her flows are tight, her wordplay's pretty fun and entertaining, you know, mixing between middle fingers to everything and kind of horny-ass sex jams. You do get, you know, some doses of emotional nuance towards the end about how all this is kind of warping her, you know, psychological state. Maybe a bit redundant on some sex jams just because, like, some are better than others. Like if you have Downstairs DJ, that's kind of where it peaks. And then, of course, we gotta, you know, shout out Otaku Hot Girl, which, unlike Lil Uzi Vert, actually knows how to incorporate references to Sasuke Uchiha in a rap song properly. I'm sorry, I still hold a grudge against that fucking song. I forget how many years ago that was, I'm still pissed about it. But yeah, Megan, real hot girl shit. Number 14. Vince Staples with Dark Times. Now, I knew this was gonna be on the year-end list, but I'm actually kind of surprised thinking on it that I ranked it ahead of, you know, the likes of Tyler and Megan and Kendrick and all that stuff, but I know who I am as a person, and sometimes I like sitting through music that's very, morose and downbeat. And that's kind of what Vince has been on in his last couple of albums, like, compared to, you know, the big in-your-face attitude of the 2010s, he's been way more of this, like, in a moodier headspace, and that's felt probably at its strongest on here, reflecting on everything from struggles with romance to, you know, the losses that he's experienced through friends and family, just how hard that is on him coming up in the game as it is, even trying to stay relevant in an industry that seemingly looks down on him, trying to, you know, maintain happiness in spite of everything that's happening. And it's definitely a very, like, mature record, but unlike a lot of times when the word mature comes up, it's not boring. Like, the Ear for Beats is still really fantastic with, you know, kind of like boom bap drum beats, a lot of somber pianos and melancholic synth textures, R&B guitars, and other elements that really work in matching like that downbeat feel. Like, on the one hand, I kind of want to call it a sad boy rap record, but that makes it sound like I'm comparing it to like Juice WRLD and Lil Uzi Vert when it's playing a completely different game. Like, I think the Apple Music description kind of puts it pretty well. This isn't music that you play in the club. This is kind of what you listen to in your earbuds on the walk home from the party when you have a moment to yourself to just think about shit. By the way, while I'm thinking about it, the one lyric on A2Faye that keeps driving me nuts, the whole, dropped big fish cub in week since, the more I listen to that line, the more nuts it drives me. Like, okay, we can debate about the, whatever you think about the quality of Vince's discography as a whole, but if you legitimately think that everything that's came from FM onward was fucking mid, who are you? I want names. I just want to talk. Have you gone back and listened to FM recently? By the way, that shit is audacious as fuck. Anyway, number 13, Igloo Ghost, Tidal Memory EXO. 3 years coming up after Leyline Eon, and the track record is still pretty consistent with this producer, still refining their approach to very kind of full-force electronic mixes that convey the vibes and atmosphere of sci-fi, you know, tech dystopia and alien worlds unknown to our own. The percussion alone carries so much, like, of a driving adrenaline in tracks like Alloy Flea and the single Choral Mimic. Which is to say nothing of how all these synthetic textures all swirl together to create, like, these energetic bursts, these, like, energetic bursting soundscapes from computerized bleeps and shimmering melodies to the more, like, percussive kind of scrapes and all. Various serene melodic reprieves to help balance things out and make the harder songs hit even more. Take, for example, something like Spawn 01, which kind of has a gentle swinging tempo and a really great sense of melody. And of course, the vocal presence is strong as ever here, where you definitely get like that very subtly synthetic bassy low end in Igloo Ghost's voice. That's kind of the cherry on the cake for me, personally speaking. Number 12. Fire Tools, Breeze. So like I think I said in the roundup covering this record, this is probably the most Fire Tools record. Like, taking all the signature elements of this project sounds from, you know, the really aggro deathcore and grindcore guitars and drum passages, the new age synths and vaporwave computery nostalgia effects, and even like the jazz saxophones and everything, and pretty much cranking them up even more than ever on here, both in frequency and even volume. Seriously, like, for as great as, like, some of the saxophone wailing is, it's fucking really, there is some fucking nasty-ass grinding drum passages and guitar breakdowns here that make it even more wild when, like, the electronic ambience swings in the full. Like, some of this shit goes harder than a lot of the more straight-up metal records I've heard this year, which is saying a lot. But yeah, apologies to all those squirrels. Number 11. Sum 41. Heaven and Hell. Is this a nostalgia bias talking? Maybe, but hear me out for a second. I run kind of hot or cold on pop punk as a genre. There are obviously bands that I like, but a lot of like the stuff that's weak to me is like really weak. And when you look at a lot of the older groups that are like still around, a lot of the time it's like, why are you still here? Like, why is Green Day still here? Why is The Offspring still here? Why is Blink-182 still here? And I wouldn't be saying that as much if their output was at least consistent, but it hasn't been. They're just wasting space. Which makes it surprising that Sum 41 has had such a consistent track record from their pop punk days in the late 90s and early 2000s to their more metal output of the 2010s. And here we are with what's supposedly their final album. I mean, I take that with a grain of salt when it's most other bands, but given that Sum 41, specifically Derek Whibley, has been dealing with a lot of really bad health problems that have been getting a bit worse over the months, they had to cancel their Australian tour because of that stuff. It very well could be the case that this is the end, but this is a very fitting capstone, one that perfectly captures the appeal of their career as a whole, with the Heaven Half embodying all the 2000s pop punk staples with a lot of really great riffs, hooks, and just a fun energy to it. And of course, the Hell Half being more of their 2010s metal output, reminding you that they had quite a bit more under the tank that I think most people gave them credit for. So, farewell Sum 41, if this truly is the end. I really am gonna miss your presence in the music world. Alright. Now, before we get to number 10, I'm gonna go through the honorable mentions really quick. So, Antichrist Demon Core with their new album, Goat. An album that I think perfectly reflects my frustrations about how much everything sucks these days. My track of choice is Thought Police, which, as I believe I've said, is a middle finger to incels. Fuck those guys. The Chisel with What a Fucking Nightmare. Again, pretty good year for hardcore punk. That title, I feel like, says it all. Japan Droids with their final album, Fate and Alcohol. Again, just a really strong rock record, like massive arena-sized riffs and hooks. The production is excellent. It's just really catchy and excellently written. Meth with their second album, Shame. Yeah, very angular, aggressively discordant in a manner that reminds me of bands like Cult Leader and the like. Job for a Cowboy, Moonhealer. A much well-deserved comeback after a decade, proving that y'all were wrong to sleep on Sun Eater, by the way. But no, yeah, this is a pretty good compliment to that, 10 years after the fact. Billie Eilish, Hit Me Hard and Soft. A really cohesive album statement as a whole, reflecting Billie kind of going through the motions with this, really, with a lot of bad relationship struggles that she's going through. But, yeah, pretty good stuff. Dan Terminus, Gothic Engine. As a reminder, I am a slut for synthwave music. Give me some good synths and I'm fucking there. Gouge Away with Deep Sage. The third album from this Florida-based punk band. This one leans a bit more into kind of more shoegaze melodic elements, but it still has a lot of a very rowdy, raucous, like, pub-ready energy to it. Couch Slut, You Could Do It Tonight, very abrasive, very deliberately unpleasant, and reflecting a lot of really, like, dark narratives in the lyrics and all. See You Space Cowboy with Coup de Grâce. This was the, admittingly, the hardest cut from the main list. Like, I guess you could call this the number 26. It's really gonna depend on how you feel about your emo Hot Topic phase, but you know, I'm kind of impressed by the audaciousness of this. Like, the tragic, you know, romance narrative at play, the very, very energetic, chaotic songwriting. And, of course, good job getting Courtney LaPlante for a guest feature. Full of Hell, Coagulated Bliss. Very, very grinding, very, very short, very, very pummeling and to the point. It is a Full of Hell record, and a pretty damn good one, like always. Shellac, To All Trains. Speaking of major losses to music in 2024, rest in peace to one of the realest ones to ever do it, Mr. Steve Albini. Denzel Curry, King of the Mischievous South, Volume 2. I feel like the collection of bangers that I rotated regularly from this record was relatively small compared to how many tracks were on the album as a whole. But to its credit, the quality of those bangers is very good. Porter Robinson, Smile, colon, well, Smile, exclamation, colon, capital D. I mean, if you like Nurture, you might still like this. It's basically that album just with a really dumb sense of humor. And you know what? Maybe that's the kind of smile I needed this year. Zeal and Ardor with Grave. My number one from, like, a couple years ago, the last Zeal and Ardor album. This one is a very interesting swing for the fences. One that tries to emphasize a lot more melodic, somber nuances as opposed to the usual aggro, like, blues extreme metal stylings, and it's an interesting effort. It definitely is something that takes some getting used to if you're really, really big on the first few Zeeland Ardor records, but it's definitely worth a listen. The Black Dahlia Murder Was Servitude. It's another pretty damn good Black Dahlia Murder record. There were just a lot of other better records this year. I'm more curious what the next one will be now that they have their bearings back together, but yeah, considering back in for new Black Dahlia material. Devin Townsend. Power Nerd. The opening song tells me that I need to pet a cat. I wish more albums opened with telling me to pet a cat. There are four cats in the house I live in, and they are very cute and very fluffy. The Hymns of the Unholy tribute EP to Cult of the Lamb. Pretty solid representation of contemporary metal conventions. And fun fact, I now actually have the game downloaded on my Switch. Thank you very much to my ever so wonderful partner, Mia. I need to actually play that stuff now once I'm not playing that other game, TM. Black Curse with Burning and Celestial Poison. Five tracks. This is like 45 minutes of just some really damn good death metal music. Like, really frenetic energy, really suffocating atmosphere, sick riffs, tremolos, solos. It is exactly what you want in good death metal. This one I picked up on from some of the year-end best of lists. Lip Critic with Hex Dealer. This is basically filling in the gap for me left by the fact that Death Grips hasn't released a damn thing in 6 fucking years.
Oh, shit.
Very specifically, this is the kind of synthetic hardcore punk stylings as The Powers That Be. Specifically, the second disc of The Powers That Be. And I bring this album up because I laughed so hard at this one specific song that is on the album. It is titled In the Wawa, parentheses, Convinced I Am God. Because I too have also had existential panics about my own place in the universe while trying to decide, do I want a chicken bacon ranch quesadilla or a chicken parmesan hoagie? Moving on from that, another one I picked up from some of the year-end lists, MJ Lenderman with Manning Fireworks. So MJ Lenderman, he is a guitarist and songwriter, arguably more well-known for his work with the band Wednesday, whose last album, Rat Saw God, was also topping a lot of the year-end charts last year. MJ Lenderman's got a bit of a different vibe to him. Like, his is still very much like that kind of college radio rock singer-songwriter stuff, but it's also very distinctly country, you know, with a good kind of interesting sense of humor in the lyrics and very, like, witty, sarcastic musings in them. So, like, I'm trying to think, like if you're into, like, Casey Musgraves, but you also fuck a lot with the music of acts like Waxahachie or Boy Genius or something, yeah, then go with this. It's pretty much country music for the college radio crowd. And last but not least, I want to give a shout out to three different soundtracks to various things. First of all, of course you knew I was going to bring it up here, from the duo of Sam Haft and Andrew Underberg, the soundtrack for season 1 of Has-Been Hotel. Which is saying a lot because, again, musicals are not my area of expertise outside of, like, the Disney Renaissance and the Book of Mormon and stuff like that. But this one was a lot of fun. It has one of the funnest villain songs I've heard in any musical with Hell is Forever. And I do apologize for the fact that Loser Baby didn't show up in my top played songs for the year. Again, in my defense, guitar solo, fuck yeah. Of course, I have to give a shout out to Colin Stetson for the Uzumaki soundtrack. Pretty much the one thing we can all agree was pretty good about that anime. It's definitely working the hardest to sell the creepy atmosphere inherent to Junji Ito's art and all. By the way, speaking of which, I should also probably mention his solo album, The Love It Took to Leave You, that came out this year, also pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
And last but not least, my favorite anime OST of the year, coming courtesy of Kensuke Ushio, a man who, as a reminder, does not miss, we have the OST for Don to Don.
Yep, I knew it.
As always, his penchant for really interesting, you know, electronic and synthetic soundscapes is very well preserved here. A mix of dark horror ambience, much more energetic. Kind of, there's a lot of funkier beats and vibes on this one, including a bit of a Latin jazz here and there. And of course, we have to shout out the two tracks that stand out the most, that being Love Story, which is the sad piano music from episode You Know What. And of course, the William Hell Overture. Don't you mean William Tell Overture? No. We call it William Hell in this house. Which honestly, William Hell sounds like they'd be an opening act for Kim Dracula. But that's neither here nor there. Now we move on to the top 10. Number 10, DJ Sabrina, the teenage DJ with Hex. So yeah, one of the more fun discoveries I made last year was the music of DJ Sabrina, who A, seems to drop albums and projects pretty regularly, and also tends to drop very, very long ones. I mean, she is a DJ after all. She's gonna drop some pretty beefy stuff. This record is like 2 hours plus, from what I remember. And that's to say nothing of some of the alternate versions of this record that dropped later on in the year, like in the months after. Like, I think there was like standalones of Hex, and I think there was also like another remix project. But look, the point is, Hex is on this list. It's really good. And because I brought up that video game DJ Dedeko, I think that's a good point to start, because something that I've come to realize, like, and I'm pretty sure most, this is kind of like no duh to a lot of people, is that there's an art to like a really good dance mix or like really good DJ club mix, because like it's not just about throwing together a bunch of banger sounding tunes. There's also like a flow to it. It's almost like it's got to tell a story. It's got to progress. Like, it's got to have its highs, you know, its lows and all, like its slower like dance moments, but it's got to flow cohesively. It's telling a story after all, in a way. And that's what's so great about Hex, is that it really understands the art of like a great DJ mix. You know, it's driven a lot by ideas of, you know, like sampling and kind of plunderphonics, like that whole genre of movement. But rather than being like, you know, a shitpost in the vein of something like Chuck Person's Echo Jams Volume 1, this really is trying to take you back and evoke a sort of wistful nostalgia. Like, it's reminding you of, like, the best nights of your life with banger tunes. Oh, and since I dropped something in the chat about Rock Marciano doing a late period release this year, I should also mention, literally the same day, DJ Sabrina dropped another album called Sorcery. That one was like an hour and 20 something minutes. That one's also pretty good, but again, Hex is on the list because that's the one that came first. Number 9, Better Lovers, Highly Irresponsible. This is an album that I like to call exactly what the doctor ordered. Because I gotta tell you, the dissolution of Every Time I Die was a really painful thing to be going through for a handful of reasons. Chief among them being that they legitimately were one of my absolute favorite bands throughout the 2010s. And seeing Keith Buckley gradually reveal himself to be, like, not just a narcissistic asshole, but also, like, a Jesus freak, unfortunately, was, not fun. Not fun at all. And that also led to the annoying hissy fit that was Many Eyes' debut record, which, God, that album still leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Leave it to, of course, the other guys in the band, alongside Greg Pucciato, to deliver a full-length record that manages to pick up the slack and feel like this particular brand of, I believe Alex called it Mike Patencore, to carry that torch into the future with Flying Colors. The riffs sound absolutely fantastic thanks to the great production. The drums bash excellently and fill out the mix well. Greg's vocals are very full force with the distinctive shouts and melodic cadences, bringing the kinds of grooves and stomping thrash that would definitely make, you know, Mike Patton proud. I know what I'm about as a person, and this record brings exactly the kind of metalcore energy that makes 2010's Rob very happy. For number 8, and number 7, I'm kind of going to group them together in the sense that they share, it's two different albums, two different bands, but they share a lot of stylistic similarities with each other, hence why I'm kind of discussing them in the same vein. So, number 8 is Frail Body with their second studio album, Artificial Bouquet, and at number 7, Infant Island with the album Obsidian Wreath. Now, they're both fairly new-ish bands in the grand scheme of things. They only have like 2 or 3 albums apart. Like, a piece, that's what I meant to say. Artificial Bouquet being Frail Body's second studio album. And Infant Island was a band that I only started following early on this year, thanks to some positive word of mouth courtesy of Mr. Spectrum Pulse. Both of these fall under the banner of Screamo, and definitely represent some of the best the genre has to offer with some of their own distinct tinges. Frail Body definitely has more of like a hardcore feel to their sound, with a lot of frantic drumming and really aggressive, fast-paced riffing. That makes a lot of sense considering they're signed on the Deathwish Inc. label, the one owned by Jacob Bannon from Converge. I mean, even a classic Screamo lineage to draw from, this very much feels like it's in the same vein of Jerome's Dream. Meanwhile, Infant Island, definitely, they're still Screamo as hell, but they feel like they're more indebted to, like, kind of the Alcest, Death Heaven mold, a very, like, blackened shoegaze influences, relying on these big walls of effects-driven guitars to create these utterly stunning, you know, walls of melancholic sound, and a lot of these, you know, really intensely somber melodies, with tempo switching between, you know, black metal blast beats and these more massive, steady senses of groove. And as I mentioned with the Vince Staples album, sometimes I just like sitting in music that's very melancholic and intensely somber, like this. Despite the subtle differences in their approaches, both these records really excel in how they deliver these uncompromisingly, like, visceral displays of raw emotion through their harsh soundscapes and excellent melodic contrasts. But also, they got me to think about something very specific. Like, I used to play in a Screamo band during a few years in my college days. We never really got that far. There were some shows that we played, but things kind of petered out for a litany of reasons. And listening to these records and how intense and just fantastic they are and how they sell just complete visceral emotions, it almost makes me kind of want to start a band that sounds like this. Which I feel like has to count for a lot in their favor, hence the high placement. Number 6. Lewis Cole and the Metropole Orchestre. Nothing. So, I forget if I've ever mentioned this, but in middle school and high school, I was a band geek. I played the trombone, and I played in both the symphonic band and the jazz band. I bring this up because I was thinking about that in relation to this record, because it's a project that combines, you know, a big, fully fleshed out orchestra with, you know, Lewis Cole's own particular jazz and funk stylings. And as someone who's been on both sides of the aisle, they kind of have some similarities, but also like different skill sets inherent to what they prioritize. Like, if you're listening to your typical symphonic band, they definitely have a lot more, you know, like emphasis on beautiful melodic dynamics and stuff like that. You know, just very lush, beautiful soundscapes. And jazz, while it can have that, it definitely focuses a lot more on, like, you know, spontaneity and also very, very tight rhythmic precision. So the fact that this album excels as well as it does in bringing those two sides together, all being anchored by Mr. Ludovici Cole est Frigis, was definitely one of the highlights of the year. Just utterly fantastic from top to bottom, with Cole's drumming and singing really being like the anchor that helps hold everything together. Really, he shows off his chops really well here, like with the really tight syncopations of grooves on Things Will Fall Apart, which plays really well with a lot of the dynamic blasts of the horn sections and the string stabs. And just the record as a whole veering around from a lot of very energetic, rhythmically focused kind of jazz songs to way more lush tracks where the orchestra definitely takes more of a focus, like These Dreams Are Killing Me or even the title track. And it's just really immaculately composed on pretty much every level. Simultaneously a fun, exciting jazz record, and one with a lot of really beautiful, gorgeous composition work. And of course, one more time for the cheap seats. Bitches. Speaking of bitches, number 5, No Worries, Why Laud.
Oh!
8 years, holy shit. A lot of stuff has happened in that time. We had like 2 different solo Anderson .Paak projects. There was, of course, the Bruno Mars collab. And just kind of a lot of stuff happening in general, including an unfortunate divorce, which is why this album exists. I mean, what do you think the title refers to? And the thing is, the album on one hand does have that very, like, slick, sexy, sensual nature to, you know, R&B music, with a lot of that really great guitar work, the really great synths, and kind of the lo-fi fuzzed out hip-hop drums. Despite that, the record does have this very, like, kind of sorrowful and even bitter undercurrent to it that really is just only best summed up by that album title, Why Laud. What I think works, like what makes this record work really fantastically, is the very blunt sense of honesty about it. Like, there's not a lot of sugarcoating here. Like, .Paak doesn't strictly try to paint himself as the wronged party here. It sounds like a really honest attempt to kind of grapple with the fact that, like, this relationship didn't work out for a ton of complicated reasons, and it sucks, because, like, it's one thing for just, like, a dating relationship to kind of end in a breakup, but when you're married and that ends in divorce, that's taking the pain of, like, a breakup and multiplying it exponentially. And he's not, like, you know, dodging around that fact. There's a lot of, like, that bitter, mean-spirited attitude on, you know, like, Keep Her with the very frequent utterances of, like, you know, you was getting your cheeks beat, bitch. By the way, I want to point out, I have shown that song to more than a few people I know. They always fucking lose it at the bitch ad-libs. Yeah, like,
you feeling... You with me!
Yeah, just feeling that utter pain and bitterness, to trying to reminisce on the good times, like on Daydreaming, to even songs like Distractions, where he's, like, literally trying to distract himself from ever having to confront the actual reality of what it is that happened and why this happened. To even, like, that one moment on the record where he's clearly talking to someone that's like, dude, what the fuck happened? You two were so good. Can you stop asking me about it? Damn!
I know I fucked up, right?
Yeah. Like I said, it doesn't sugarcoat, like, any aspect of this relationship. It sounds like there was a ton of reasons, like, why it all just didn't work out, and that's just what makes it work. It's a very honest record about, like, just all of this. Good thing he's got No Worries to at least make it sound sexy as fuck. Seriously, those guitars on Daydreaming are just, like... Alright, now we're gonna go into the top 4 here, and it's all varying flavors of metal. Surprise, surprise. So, let's start with number 4. Sivorous, Maze Envy. So despite the fact that I play in a death metal band, I'll admit I'm not quite as well versed in the contemporary underground of death metal as a lot of my mutuals, just because they are hyper focused fucking obsessives about every, like, obscure band coming up in this or that city, which drives me fucking nuts that I haven't seen any of them talking about this fucking album. Keep in mind, people have to be knowing that it exists. The one reason it landed on my radar was because of a Fantano review where he whipped out the yellow fucking flannel. And he was very much right to do so. Like, this is the good death metal, people. This is the peak shit. Like, this is an absolutely crushing, heavy-ass balls record here, with a very suffocating, cavernous sound brought on by these thick, chuggy-as-fuck guitar tones belting out these absolutely massive riffs and grooves. The absolutely booming, pummeling drums, heavily accentuating and really locking in those rhythms with the guitars and all. the vocals carrying through the mix with that very, like, reverb-heavy production. Like, this fucking otherworldly beast calling out to you from the other side of a fucking dark, wide abyss. It's fucking brutal and heavy as shit. But what really makes it work for me is that there's just also great songwriting that knows how to balance things out with a really strong sense of melody. With a lot of songs often placing these very eerie melodic guitar passages at exactly the right spots to offset all of the groove and heavy darkness. And yet, despite relying on incredibly lengthy song structures, the songwriting is excellent enough in how it constantly keeps things, you know, exciting and interesting as a result. Like, seriously, this has to be one of the most underrated metal releases of the year, death metal or otherwise. Now for number 3. So, a brief tangent. Something I've noticed with a lot of year-end lists, as I've started paying more attention to, like, you know, the big music blogs and all, is that naturally they tend to gravitate around a handful of specific genres, from indie rock to underground electronic to singer-songwriter and even experimental pop. But usually they tend to have one or two of what I like to call the token metal albums, you know, the one or two metal albums of any given year that all major music publications like Pitchfork, Stereo Gum, and Consequence will all agree and say, okay, we can put this alongside the likes of MKG and Charlie XCX. But a lot of the time, I think they get it wrong. Like, this slot is usually reserved for the likes of, like, bands like Death Heaven or Code Orange, which, historically, I have been known to not fucking like. But you know what? Credit where it's due. Sometimes they get it utterly fucking right. Hence, number 3. Blood Incantation, Absolute Elsewhere. So, this band has been blowing up quite a bit since at least their 2019 album, Hidden History of the Human Race, which is very much like very cosmic, brain-expanding kind of death metal, the kind you listen to on several illicit substances. And they went for a particular big swerve in 2022 with Time Wave Zero, a record that was 40 minutes of just pure synthesizer-driven ambience with nary a guitar drum beat in sight. But this record brings things back to just, well, at first, straight-up death metal territory. Like, there's no mistaking it. The drums carry tons of blast beats, lots of really fast, pummeling tom fills to really drive the momentum of the songs. The guitar work is utterly, you know, savage and aggressive. Tons of tremolos, dive bombs, sweep picking, big-sounding grooves. Of course, once again, we're getting that, you know, cavernous, you know, reverb-laden death metal vocal style. There's no mistaking that part. It is fucking death metal through and through. But, of course, being a Blood Incantation record, things gotta get really weird and out there, with this album in particular having a ton of just, like, 70s prog rock influence mixed into the fold, with these breaks of, like, just these very lush guitar melodies and really great drifting synthesizers, including some contributions from the long-running electronic collective Tangerine Dream on one of the tracks, which offer this really, you know, psychedelic great contrast to the album's, you know, grittier, more violent instincts. Like, if you ever thought bands like Pink Floyd and King Crimson would sound better with blast beats, well, first of all, you are a very specific, strange sort of individual. But second, do I have the record for you? It's Blood Incantation's world. We're all living in it. They pretty much make whatever albums they want to at this point. And yeah, much like with previous records, this does have that weird, like, dividing thing where it's basically two very long songs that are divided into, like, three movements apiece. Because, again, Blood Incantation, they can do that. Number 2. Chatpile, Cool World. So I only recently got around to the music of the Oklahoma band Chatpile, and I could say this is acting really really well to satiate my need for extremely uncomfortable, anxiety-inducing heavy music in the vein of artists like Kristen Michael Hader. though this is definitely more of a full band setup compared to her more avant-garde kind of stuff. But anyway, on the band's second full-length album, which, yes, is in fact named after that one Brad Pitt movie that was basically a Roger Rabbit knockoff. Y'all remember that shit?
Yeah.
I do. But yeah, on this record, compared to the first one, which conveyed a lot of really terrifying lyrical nightmares that were very contextually specific to, you know, life in America and just, like, the horrors of middle America, fucking Oklahoma in general, this one kind of expands the lyrical scope a lot more broadly with some of the bigger picture nightmare horrors of the world. Specifically, lyrically, there's a very specific focus on kind of, like, the horrors of war and stuff like that. Gee, I wonder why. And it's tackled from various angles, like a soldier with PTSD or experiencing guilt at the actions one has to take on the battlefield, watching those around you die, inflicting pain on the innocent, following orders and doing as you're told, only to be completely discarded and receiving nothing in return from the powers that you were taking orders from. And, of course, it's all backed up by some of the most, by what is a natural continuation from their first record. Production-wise, it retains a lot of the same stylings with this very, like, industrial Godflesh-style tinge to the drums. Of course, speaking on the lyrics, frontman Raygun Bush's vocals swerving between moaning melancholy and more frantic, belting, anxiety-filled delivery. And the guitars are very appropriately sludgy and brittle when they're filling out the low end, which is to say nothing of the kind of grungy melodies that they embody, and the more uncomfortable, like, grating just lead passages. Like, they always know how to strum those chords in exactly the right way that just kind of, like, your ears kind of have to, like, cringe, if you understand what I mean. Just, like, when you hear, like, a sudden sharp scraping, like, But, of course, aside from, you know, the horrors of, you know, stuff like war, there's other, like, very deep, like, just uncomfortable lyrical topics delved into, like the album Closer, which presents the idea that whatever rung of society you're born into, get used to it, buddy, because you're probably going to be doomed to be stuck there if the powers that be have anything to say about it. And then, of course, my favorite track off the record and probably my one of my absolute, like, top 10 favorite songs of the year as a whole, Mask, M-A-S-C, is a song that's driven by, like, you know, not just toxic masculinity, but also the anxieties inherent in emotionally opening yourself up to other human beings. I did not ask to be called out like this. But all of this, from, you know, the very dingy, just filthy production to the intense discomfort of the lyrics and vocals, all swirl together into an incredibly compelling package in what I like to call the number one feel-bad album of the year. Like I said, with stuff like Frail Body and Infant Island and, of course, Vince Staples, sometimes you want to sit with an album that's just kind of moody or very, very emotionally intense. Especially a record like this that just kind of reflects all my darkest intrusive thoughts back in me for the sake of catharsis. And now for the number one, which from a certain perspective might read as sort of a basic bitch answer. I mean, the band's been gradually growing in hype over the course of the last 5 years. The album has been the talk of the wider online rock and metal spaces as a whole, to the point where every fucking content creator has been getting in on reaction stuff for them. They got a fucking Grammy Award nomination. And they even performed that Grammy-nominated single on TV. And you know what? If you're going to call it a basic pick, then you know what I have to say to that hypothetical straw man that I'm building just to create a funny segue? Orf, orf! Number one, Knocked Loose. You won't go before you're supposed to. Seriously, a fucking wild step up in the 5 years between A Different Shade of Blue and now. Of course, there was that 6-track EP that came out in the interim, but seriously, these guys, that 5 years between, like, big studio albums, they very clearly spent that time really letting things cook. Because they were just, like, a pretty typical metalcore band at the outset. But as their identity has evolved, they really were able to carve out something special for themselves here into a relentlessly cathartic, pummeling freight train of an album. Like, of course, Alex brought up the, like, particular ring of the snare tone on this record, but also, whoever the fuck came up with that fucking guitar tone was a goddamn mad genius. This is a perfect example of how you can make really loud, blown-out production and do it very right. That combined with, you know, the drums themselves all across the record slamming like a fucking sledgehammer to the nuts. Still fucking wild they did the reggaeton bridge on Suffocate. Of course, Brian Garris's vocal approach, which can take some getting used to because of the more distinctive high-pitched yelp. Like, I've seen TikTok shitposts referring to them as knocked goose. But I'm pretty sure that's coming from fans. We have fun here. But it definitely works 100% well in selling the utter catharsis in the lyrics, which conveys a lot of pissed off messages of, like, you know, betrayal, survival, vengeance, mental health struggles, with an extremely blunt sort of attitude. And of course, even trying to, you know, survive through the bullshit of the world despite it all. Seriously, just as a quick sidebar, according to my Apple Rewind, my number one most listened to song was the single Don't Reach For Me. And I gotta tell you, the line on that song, "That's exactly why your daughter left," might easily be the single hardest song lyric of the year that wasn't written by Kendrick Lamar. All this contained, again, in a pretty tight record under 30 minutes with very little in terms of wasted downtime. Like even if I'm not that big on the Chris Motionless appearance on Slaughterhouse 2, that's still just a fucking really damn good song. Every breakdown hits, every groove fucking slams, the record is a goddamn body blow fucking worthy of the hype and reputation it's developed. You know what I say to the fucking boomers complaining about this? Bring in even more junting of the guitars. Junt away, I say. We've moved on from gent. We are in our junt era. And yes, that is the end of the list. That is my top 25. Editing this is gonna be fun, because there's a lot of coughing I gotta work around. And maybe if I did my job right, you'll only hear two or three coughs. But, once again, at the end of the year, I have to say, thank you for listening to 2 hours of us talking about albums we liked. Thank you for listening to any episodes we posted over the years, whether it was, you know, talking about boring procedural stuff or fun beefs or weird songs here and there. Again, thank you for all that. We've somehow made it to the end of the year. 2025 is going to be rough, we can tell from the outset. All we can do is survive as best we can. But we're still going to keep trucking along with this podcast anyway, because what the hell else am I supposed to do on a Monday night? Oh, fuck, right, it's Tuesday. What even is time? But yeah, you know all the plugs, you know where to find us, socials all down there in the down there part. And again, thank you for listening. We'll be back once the new year starts to bring you more news and songs and all that stuff. So until then, hope you're all enjoying your holidays. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy new year. And until then, peace.
Party at Rob's house! Bring the liquor!
Wait, what the fuck? God damn it, Mark! You get back here!